Hi, friends. It's Abby Feeder, certified life and fertility coach, and you're listening to The Fertility Chick. This show is all about the path to parenthood, which is never the same for everyone, and our guests' professional success along the way. Woo, we are in for a good one today. It involves drugs, Trump, pageantry, and a beautiful baby. I cannot wait for you to hear 2006 Miss America, Tara Conner. Let me welcome you. Tara, welcome.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. So happy you're here. So happy we've connected. Mm-hmm. You have so much light to share, and I just want as many people as possible to be able to absorb that light. So let's get into it.
All right. Thank you for that. That's really nice.
Yeah. So most people know you for sharing your addiction story, and we're going to get into that.
Yeah.
I know you from first and foremost from sharing mm-hmm. your fertility story or infertility story. Mm-hmm. So let's start there. And then I have so many deep questions I want to ask you about the pageant world too. So we'll get into that.
Okay. Let's hit it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds good to me.
Yes. Yeah. So let's start with you have a happy ending at this moment.
I do.
Beautiful baby boy. Sorry. Yep. Beautiful baby girl. Not that it matters.
Yep.
Beautiful baby girl.
We would have taken whatever we could have gotten, but we only made girls.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, but she was the only normal girl. So she was our one shot and she's our little miracle baby.
So tell me how your journey went.
So my husband and I started back in 2018, right after we got married. And neither one of us wanted kids before that. We're both like in the entertainment world. I've always been told like, make sure you don't get pregnant, make sure you don't get pregnant. And I've had that question asked to me throughout my life all the time. And I never really wanted kids. You know, it went from, when are you going to get pregnant? After it's like, don't do it, but when are you going to do it? You know? Right. And then when we met, we both were like, I mean, maybe that's something we could do like later, you know, like down the road. But when we got married that night, he looked at me and he was like, I think I want to put a baby in you. And I was like, all right. And it just like changed the whole idea. It was like, how do we make this more official aside from marriage? Mm. And because I've thought that pregnancy was such an easy thing and it's such a scary thing to look out for, like never in a million years did I think it wouldn't work the first time, you know, like mm-hmm. he slipped one past the goalie and we were like, we're pregnant. That's
right.
It.
Yep. You're like, this is it. Welcome to parenthood. Yep.
Absolutely. And I did that cute thing where you like test out all your pregnancy tests and you make little journals so that you can see the lines getting darker. And I was like, they're not getting darker. Nothing's happening. What the fuck is happening?
Yeah. You can curse. It's all good.
Okay. And I the first month I was like, it's okay. It's fine. Next month. The next month comes around. Nothing happened. I had another girlfriend that had started the exact time that I did. Neither one of us got pregnant that month. The next month happened. Neither one of us got pregnant. And it was getting frustrating. It was mm-hmm. like, okay, well, they say it could take like 6 months. So I told myself a 6 month window. And then the following month, she got pregnant. And I was pumped for her, but I was also like, oh, wait, we're supposed to do this together. You know, because you live in this world where you can plan your pregnancy.
Right. Isn't that funny?
It's so cute.
Yeah.
And then 2 months later, my best friend got pregnant and then her sister was pregnant. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it was the new wave of the soul sucking journey of infertility. And I remember going to a doctor. I went to just a regular gynecologist at 6 months because I wasn't trying to wait for the whole year, you know.
Of course.
And so I went into that gynecologist. I was like, we've been trying for over a year, even though it had only been 6 months. What can we do? And she was like, well, we can test if you've ovulated or not. And I was like, okay. And she's like, come in at this time and we'll test your ovulation. And then I'm like, okay. But that's all that she did. She just wanted to test my progesterone at a certain time to see if I ovulated. So we did that a couple of times, but then it was like so discouraging because she didn't give a shit.
Which, and by the way, you were at least coming in after 6 months. Imagine if you'd waited the year and then she didn't give a shit. It would have really been like 18 months before you did anything. So right. Frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Mm. It's my hug in a mug.
Oh, very cute.
So I was pretty distraught. I mean, and my husband and I did everything. Like, we did weird shit. Mm-hmm. So I took all the supplements. I took all the, like, over-the-counter progesterone. Mm-hmm. I did some weird shit.
Yep.
And then we even tried, like, artificial insemination with his sperm just to get it close to my, like, uterus.
Uh-huh. Make sure it was getting in there.
Yeah. And so that was fun and weird. Bought all the stuff to do it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, after 2 years and people are on their second pregnancy announcement, we were like, all right, we'll go to the fertility clinic and see what's going on. So I go to Southern California Reproductive Center. Mm-hmm. And we did a consultation. They did ultrasound of my follicles. They took my blood and they tested all the right stuff. And they're like, okay, well, you have diminished ovarian reserve. Mm-hmm. And of course, I don't know what that means. Right. Like, these are all words that are very foreign. And I remember when they were doing that first ultrasound to look at my follicles, as I'm like looking up in my mind, it's like I'm looking at the ultrasound in it. I remember her being like, you see these little chocolate chips? They look like chocolate chips. Those are your follicles. And I was like, oh, cool. Right. And I noticed that there was like two. And I was like, and so I'm like Googling, how many should I have at my age? And it's saying, because I was 33.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be way more than what I had. I think I had six total. Mm. And so doctor calls, I have diminished ovarian reserve, and tested my husband's sperm. Of course, he's got magic swimmers.
Sure.
So that's its own like defeating experience. And
even though
itself,
there's literally nothing you can do about diminished ovarian reserve. I mean, nothing.
Yeah. I can't eat cleaner to make there be more. I can't. There's nothing there that's going to fix that.
Right.
So my doctor, Dr. Lena Akopians, she said I don't want to do more than like 4 IUIs. And she said, I feel like they're kind of a waste of time. So if that doesn't do it, then we'll move on to IVF. Rocky Elizabeth. Stop it. So I middle named her.
But obviously.
Yeah. She's the, here, come here, dummy.
My dog had a, that passed away, but she had a middle name as well. Of course, like the best opportunity to use your names.
Yeah. My mom used to always go, Tara Elizabeth.
Yeah.
When I was in trouble. So now all three of my dogs, all female, they get Elizabeth.
I mean, oh, she's a cutie.
She's so cute. She loves me. Mm-hmm. So it was just crazy. We did an HSG test, like the dye test, check your fallopian tubes and whatnot. And that was the worst pain of my life. No one warned me about that.
Yeah.
For some people, that pain is worse than labor.
Yeah. You.
I was one of those people.
Interesting.
I almost pooped on the doctor. I was almost vomiting on the nurse while simultaneously almost pooping on the doctor. And my blood pressure dropped and I was like,
oh, you poor thing. That's horrible.
And there's this huge x-ray thing, like right on my tummy. I can't go anywhere. Yeah. And I'm like, I've never felt pain like that in my life. In my life. And it was the balloon. The catheter was like, okay. Right.
It's uncomfortable, but it's not like painful. But that balloon, I know it's.
Girl.
Yeah.
Shot me up like a rocket. And so she did the first tube. It was open. And then I was like, I gotta stop.
Oh my God.
And she was like, I don't want to have to do this again. So if you can just, can you power through for the other follicle? And I was like, yeah, just do it. I'm sobbing. And I had to like, you
was
know,
your husband with Eli with you?
No, it was during COVID.
Oh,
every procedure that I did was on my own because the husbands weren't allowed to be in the room.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare. So I asked my doctor, is that normal? And she said, maybe 1% of patients have the response that you do. I was like, awesome.
You're like, of course.
That's me. So tubes were fine. And so we went towards a medicated IUI with just Clomid. Then we did a second IUI with Clomid and Donalef. And then that didn't work. And so we did all of those rounds, four rounds. It was bunkus, like nothing. And then we went into IVF. And I'm literally just like, my husband and I both are just paying for this.
Yeah.
As in thinking, okay, well, this will be worth it. Okay, well, this will be worth it. And we are like thousands of dollars in savings. Just I mean, hemorrhaging money. And we get this package and we're like, oh, it's only going to be like X amount, but they don't tell you like meds or this amount. And you're like, oh. So we do our round of IVF. And I think I had 7 follicles. I might mess up these numbers, but I only got about 7 mature. Out of them, 5 fertilized. Out of the 5 fertilized, 4 became blasts. And then out of those 4, they were all sent for genetic testing and only 1 came back healthy. And that's easy. Like we have a success story and it's amazing. And we're really, really lucky. We also have a mosaic on ice. And she's a low level mosaic and we call her Mosey because she's, you know, and she's just chilling, you know, but there's a lot of studies on mosaic embryos and there's, you know, a lot of live birth rates, like with healthy babies. And so we, in the back of my mind, we're like, okay, well, we've got Mosey, just, you know, not as like worst case scenario, but we would love to have another baby.
Yeah.
You know, we would love to.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this. How was your pregnancy?
Pregnancy was terrifying. I remember when we got pregnant, I was just like, no way. And I tested early because I'm a pee on a stick addict. And no,
well, obviously for your journaling of your like lines getting darker.
I'd wasted so much money on pregnancy tests. So I, you know, I pee on this stick and it's says yes. And I just like, I'm sitting on the toilet and I'm naked and I start running down the stairs and I'm like, where am I going? And my husband's like, what are you saying? I run at him just naked. And we were just in disbelief and we were going to the ultrasounds and you know, everyone, you're holding your breath before you go in there. And then she's like, everything's good. Everything's good. And it's just like, you get used to getting weekly ultrasounds and then it turns into like, oh, you're a normal person now.
Right. And that's terrifying.
Yeah. Because now I only get ultrasounds every like 4 weeks.
Right.
Anyway, it was soul crushing and scary. And I didn't breathe at all, probably until well into the third trimester. Because
You're just waiting for a shoe to drop. Yeah. You're waiting for a shoe to drop the whole time.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. So as far as, oh, and I didn't have gnarly symptoms. Like I didn't get the nausea. The only real symptom that I noticed was lettuce tasted like soap.
Interesting. I'm like a kale addict before it was trendy. Like I've always loved kale and it made me want to vomit and almost did many times. And it was the same thing. It didn't even taste like soap. It just, I couldn't even stomach it.
Like it was rotten. It tasted rotten. Ugh. Yeah. It was so rotten soap, if there's a such thing, but that was weird. And then, but because I didn't get crazy symptoms like everybody else did, I was like, oh, then it must not be
A strong pregnancy. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. You know, the coolest thing that I learned in at that specific moment was my attitude towards the situation had nothing to do with the result.
Yes,
because
totally.
You hear so many times, just stay positive, you know, like, you gotta just, you know, relax, just, I mean, that's a whole fucking thing all on its own, or all of the like fertility experts out there giving you their diagnosis. God. So I was miserable. I was like, no way this is going to work. But you know, that was a very spiritual experience for me because, I feel like God didn't need my permission to work in my life.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I love that.
And, you know, but I loved being pregnant. I had wanted it for so long that even the uncomfortable symptoms, like I was one of those that was holding my belly from like conception. And it was smooth sailing. Like nothing really crazy happened until 2 months before I was due. And then, so they eventually went in because I dilated half of a centimeter. So he gets in there and they do an emergency C-section and the epidural only worked on half of my body. And so they're like tilting me on the table to try to get gravity to pull the, you know, the epidural juice or whatever to the right side of my body. And I mean, I'm panicking because I'm afraid that they're going to cut into me and I'm going to feel it.
Yeah, of course.
And I was like, oh my gosh, can you just put me under? Just put me under. Like, I don't need to like be here for this. Mm-hmm. And basically felt like I died on the table because this sounds so dramatic, but it's like, you know, it happened. I'm asking them to put me under. The anesthesiologist goes and gets, you know, the drugs to do that, I guess. And they hit me with ketamine. And the second that they hit me with that ketamine, like, I remember feeling like I left my body. Now, I've tripped before because I'm a drug addict. Mm-hmm. And this was not that. This was something completely different. I saw myself going through like this crazy, colorful tunnel. Have you seen Thor?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, if anyone listening, like, if you've seen the bridge that goes into Asgard, whatever, where Thor lives, it looked just like that, except it was like a funnel. Like, I don't know. It was, and the noises that I heard was like,
were you consciously aware in this like trip or whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
that it was a trip and you were, or did you, or were you thinking
no,
literally
I said to myself, oh my God, I just died. Mm-hmm. This is how I die? Are you kidding me? Like, and I felt like my spirit was just kind of being pulled into wherever it was going next. I don't know. And I lost all the sensations that made me human, like in this meat suit. Like I lost all physical feeling of pain and physical feeling of anything. I wasn't feeling any emotion. So there was no fear. There was no joy. There was no peace. There was nothing. It was just like, I was just this ball of energy going through this journey. And then I remember like my husband during this time while I was on the table, he was like speaking into my ear and I heard him saying, you're so powerful. You're so strong. We love you. You're doing such a good job. And I remember thinking to myself, oh my God, like I'll never find another Eli. Like I've got to get back to Eli. And then I reversed, like I was being pulled back and I was like, I got to pick up my daughter. And so it was like, I went and grabbed my daughter and we both came back at the same time. And as I was going back through that same tunnel to come back into my body, the closer I got, I started feeling like scared and like, you know, human emotions again. Mm-hmm. And then I started feeling physical pain. And by the time I like came to, I was like screaming because I felt the pain of being like stitched up and all of that. And I knew I had died. Like my vitals were fine, but my spirit left my body and you couldn't tell me otherwise ever. And even my mom, when I came to, I was going, oh my God, I died. It's actually really funny. It's on my Instagram. If you dig enough, you'll see.
I'm going to dig it. When you come to, or when you were in there, how old was your daughter when you're like, we have to go together? How old was she there?
She was just a being. Like I didn't see a physical anything. Yeah. I just knew I have to go get ZZ. So it was just like, we were these two balls of energy that were coming back. And my mom said at one point she was watching me and watching the baby because they had her on the table and she was not like doing the screaming, crying thing. It was and it was as if she was, it was like, she was not doing what babies do when they come into the world, like scream their faces off. She seemed like she was struggling. And my mom said, I thought that I lost both my girls that day. Like, I knew it. She was like, because you look dead. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh. And yeah, the first thing that I said when I came to is, I died. Oh my God, I died. And they were like, you didn't die. I was like, I didn't die. I thought I died. But I did. You can't convince me otherwise. And the next day, I could still see the colorful whatever it was in my peripheral vision. Mm. Like as if I was still like
between
places. Yeah. Mm. But it made me want to enjoy like every single day after that in a different kind of way, because I had a new appreciation for life. It's a weird story. Like, it's a long one.
I love it. I'm so into it. I love it. And I also feel like it's a good segue into the other half of your life, which is the addiction half. Mm-hmm. And gosh, I mean, I was thinking, because I know this week you had a backache that I know about. And so I was thinking mm-hmm. in my head, like, gosh, you probably can't really take very much medicine. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we were talking about that and thinking about your birth when I was preparing to talk to you today, I'm like, I wonder what it is like when you're an addict and you need all those pain meds. What can you take? What can't you take? So I know your addiction started very young.
Yes. So yeah, 14.
14 years old. So, mm-hmm. and then at what point did you become sober? Because you've been sober a while now, right?
Yeah, I've been sober 17 years.
Amazing. Congrats.
I know, it's wild. I got sober while I was Miss USA. And yes. It was, you know, that big hub, like public to do. And I went to treatment a week before I turned 21, but I had been in full blown addiction from 14. So
21. Oh my, like the full 6 or 7 years.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So I mean, so many questions about this. At what point did you start pageant life?
I started pageant life at 14.
And do you think, cause I've heard you speak about it and it doesn't seem like you think that they were necessarily tied together. Do you?
I feel like the pageants were a mask, because when I would, for some reason, when I would enter a pageant, like in Kentucky, I would win. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't care about being there. I wasn't a big fan of doing them, but my mom wanted me to try a few, and you know, it like took me places, and I started getting like a recognition and recognized. And I was like, oh, this is, I don't know, this like it kept people away from me. Because at the same time, when I started doing pageants, my grandfather had passed away and he was my best friend. So I was struggling with that and I was grieving. And my parents were going through a really nasty divorce. So I was, you know, grieving that. And also just kind of feeling like I had to grow up too soon. You know, like I was suffering in silence. I didn't think that my mom or family could wrap their head around the things that I was going through. So I kept a lot of stuff to myself. And when I first started drinking, I was on a cheerleading trip and I was like in middle school, but I cheered for the high school team because I was so talented.
Obviously.
Hair flip. And I was with juniors and seniors. I had my first drink and I got hammer smashed the first time and was like, I'll never do that again. I don't get why people enjoy that. Like it tastes gross. I'm miserable the next day. Like it wasn't cute. And, you know, sure enough, they're like, why don't you try this? And I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of became like a dumpster, but you know, I had an affinity for opiates and alcohol. Like if it was there, I would drink it. And if I could take something to take me out of me, I would, because you know, I was suffering early, like really young. I started suffering. That's the only way I knew how to put it. Like, and a lot of kids do, like, it was like the hardest time of my life, you know, from the age of 3 until 21. It was just like a nightmare.
Okay. Here's the thing. We all know that it's so hard to imagine from where I'm sitting, you in this pain and then walking across a stage in a bikini mm-hmm. and a bathing suit and a evening gown and looking happy and pure and clean. And I'm thinking like, what were you thinking when you were doing those, when you were on camera, like in a bathing suit being like, I'm killing it and I'm going to win. And knowing inside that you were like, looking for your next drink or your next whatever it might be.
It was my solution. It turned into being my solution, you know, like
you could feel good about yourself.
I just felt normal. Like, I think that's the only way to put it, because I was suffering with anxiety and depression really young, like super young. And I remember feeling suicidal before I ever put a drink or a drug in my body. So when I did finally start using, I felt a sense of relief and I could breathe because it worked. Like, it did something for me that nothing else was doing. Like, I tried everything, you know, like I tried going to church. I tried like throwing myself at the altar. I tried praying. I tried healthy eating. I tried yoga. I tried all of these things to try to change the way that I felt. I tried him. I tried his friend. I tried his other friend. Mm-hmm. You know, like I did all of the things. It was also a very small town, so I was a trollop. Mm-hmm. So I was just trying to survive. When I won Miss USA, I was high as a kite. I had taken a Xanax earlier that day, so I wasn't really like paying attention. I wasn't there. Mm. I barely remember it.
Mm. And how did you ultimately get yourself into rehab?
So, funny story. I had pissed off Miss Teen USA, who was my roommate. Because at the time, Miss USA, Miss Teen USA, Miss Universe all lived together.
Which is bonkers.
Bonkers. I mean, during that year.
In Trump Tower or Trump Plaza or whatever it is.
It was like Trump Place, like on Riverside Boulevard. There was a bunch of like Trump places. So we lived in one of those and we were all under 21. None of us were legal. Mm-hmm. But we still lived like teenagers in New York City. And the Teen USA brings her boyfriend to visit. And that was, we were all hanging out and we're drinking and we're doing all this stuff. And she thought I was flirting with her boyfriend, which absolutely did not happen. But in a drunken like rage, she like texted my boss and was like, Tara's doing cocaine. Mm-hmm. So she was like, big old narc. And I get pulled into the office the next day and they send me for a drug test. And I told them before I went, I was like, I'm going to fail it. Like, this is not necessary. I'll tell you.
Were you scared? Were you happy? Were you relieved? What did it feel like?
It felt like, well, I've screwed the pooch. You know what I mean? Like, the jig is up. But it was also like kind of a relief, because what ended up ultimately happening is they leaked the failed drug test. I learned this years and years later that the organization leaked my failed drug test.
Sorry.
And yeah, I mean, I put myself in the position, like I'll take ownership, blah, 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 blah. But I was also a fucking child.
Right.
I was a child. If you are before 25, it ain't working yet. Yeah. It ain't it. Like, your brain is not fully developed at that point. And what I was put through, nowadays people would refer to that as extreme bullying. Mm-hmm. Because addiction is an illness. Yes. And I wasn't treated like it was an illness. I was treated like it was a choice. Mm-hmm. And they leaked my failed test. So within 24 hours, I was on the front page of every single trash mag. I was on the front page of like Page Six and the New York Post and the Daily Mail and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I was worldwide news. You turn on like E! News, Inside Edition, all of the celebrity like trash talk. I was on all of that. I was on NBC, CNN, or MSNBC. Like, I made it to SportsCenter for like top 10 flops of the day. It was everywhere. Like, if you didn't know me, you did in January of 2006, because mm-hmm. you knew, you heard, oh, I think I heard about that girl. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so when you go through having your worst nightmare play out in front of you and you're surviving it, there's kind of a freedom that came with it. And I, for the first time, felt like, well, what you see is what you get, mm-hmm. you know? And I leaned into it because I think that, you know, I was 20 years old And I hated New York. I hated living in New York. I came from a 2,400 person town at the time with two whole stoplights and had never had sushi or Starbucks. I didn't know what a cross street was. Like, it was a massive culture shock. I felt like I didn't belong. They treated me like I didn't belong. My grammar was different. Cause I was from a different region, you know, mm-hmm. like I was from the true South, like the ding, 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 ding. Like, you know, we loved, you know, fried chicken, cornbread, you know, we loved hanging out and everybody drinking beer and smoking cigarettes. Like, that's where I came from. Mm-hmm. And church on every corner, everybody loves Jesus. And there's only Jesus. There's no other option. You know what I mean? Like, it was just, that was it. And I wasn't brought in and like, well, this is a unique person to herself. Let's just lean into that. But no, they gave me a grammar coach and a dialect mm-hmm. coach. And, you know, they would have me sit back and rewatch my interviews and like pretty much point out every wrong thing that I said. So I'm just being traumatized over and over and over and over and over. You're not enough. You're not enough. And that's already what I thought about myself. I already felt like you ain't shit. You're never going to be shit. Why even try? Mm-hmm. And so when you're coming from that type of space in your head and you're put into a position where it's being reinforced, my self-esteem was in the shitter. So by the time everyone that I tried to prove wrong, my whole life was finally proven right. I could breathe.
Like it was, fight it anymore.
Didn't have to fight it anymore. Didn't think I was an addict. Mm-hmm. I hadn't come to that like realization yet, but I did become a human being. Like I just became a person that had struggled with things. And then I started learning about alcoholism and addiction while I was in treatment and found out I had a substance use disorder and I wasn't like a bad person. I was a sick person.
So they leak your drug report and then they're like, you need to go to rehab and they put you to the right place.
So what ended up happening, because Donald Trump owned the pageant at the time, him and NBC. And so after about 2 weeks, I went to his office in New York City and they wanted me out. Like the president of the organization, the Miss Universe organization at the time, and most of the people that worked there were like, off with her head, let's get rid of her. Because I was a handful. Like was, you know.
Right.
But the other girls were a handful as well. They just didn't get caught the way that I did, by the by. But they wanted me gone. And they're in the car with me on the way to the press conference because they were holding this massive press conference to announce my fate. And there were so many paparazzi there. It was intense. Just, I couldn't be in New York at the time without being followed by several cars. It was terrifying. And we pull up to this press conference. I go up to Donald Trump's office. And he's like, what do we do with this? Like, you are out all the time. You're drinking, you're dancing on tables, like you're kissing girls. I was like, I never danced on a table. Everything else was true.
Yes. Okay.
but he was like, what do I do with that? And, you know, just with whatever manipulation tool I had in me, I just kind of played to his ego. And I said, you know, I just feel like it would say more about the organization and more about your character if you helped me.
Wow.
And maybe gave me some, you know, help. Like maybe I could turn this around and be the best Miss USA you've ever seen. And he goes, Trump saves Miss USA. I like it.
Oh my God.
And
I'm dying.
I know. So then we go into the elevator to go down to the press conference. And he really wanted me to make sure that I said that he saved my life.
Of course.
And then he says, bring on the tears. They love that. So my rock bottom is being played out for everyone to see. And I quickly realized that I was a puppet. I knew that like, this isn't Okay. But I would not say that he saved my life.
Yeah, of course.
I said, I want to thank Mr. Trump for saving me on this one. That's what I said.
Okay. And they kept you in, right? They didn't.
Yes. So the PR person at the Karen Treatment Center in Reading, Pennsylvania had watched the news conference, and Trump had said something along the lines of like giving me a second chance. And he called me Tara. It's not Tara, it's Tara, you know, and gave me the second chance heard around the world. And then they offered to take me in and give me treatment. And I went to their program, and it was that place really opened my eyes a lot, because they taught me so many things about substance use disorders that I wasn't privy to, you know, and most people weren't. This was 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, these days people are a little more well-versed, you know, these days if someone overdoses, they get thoughts and prayers.
Right.
Not I said the cat, you know what I mean? Like I was like a witch at the Salem witch trials, and like off with her head. Like I was getting death threats from all over the world. Like you should be ashamed of yourself. And I was, you know, like I just felt like an overall like screw up, you know, and I had a general understanding that I wasn't well because I saw that I was getting better. I couldn't deny that staying sober was changing my emotional nature, but I came out of that facility a completely different person, just armed with like so much knowledge about myself.
Education, yeah. Tools, resources. Was that the first time you'd ever had any kind of therapy, talk therapy?
I was given some talk therapy when I was in high school, but I definitely was guarded because they knew
something
wasn't.
And you were an addict still. You were still an addict.
Right. Like I wasn't going to be like, I do drugs for fun.
Right.
High five, you know? But yeah, it was the first time that I'd ever had a chance to just like be a human. Because I also had been trying to play to the person that I was speaking to my whole life. Like I was a chameleon, but for the first time in forever, there's really something cool about hitting rock bottom because your feet touch the ground. There's only one way to go, but up. Mm. And there was a piece that came with that, you know, because I think that a lot of people are just so terrified of how they're going to look. I think that that's something that plagues us all mostly every single day is, how's this situation going to come across, or how is this going to make me look in, you know, the media or to the family or to work or whatever. Like we're all just so terrified of looking bad. Look at Instagram. It's like a highlight reel. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time in my life, I could just be unabashedly who I was. And there was so much freedom that came with that. And it's only gotten better and better through the years, you know, like I just don't have it in me these days to give a shit. Like my give a damn is busted.
Mm-hmm.
It is like in the crapper, you know, because I just don't have time.
Yeah.
I don't have time to be bothered by what the masses or family or coworkers or any of that, what they have to think about me. I treat everyone with love and kindness. And if Cassandra comes out, which is my alter ego, that's just my ego, then I make an amends quickly if I caused harm. I'm a good human being. You know, I'm a great daughter.
You are a great human being. You exude just like love. You really do.
Thank you.
And we've met only briefly, but you can tell that from you very quickly. How did you meet Eli, and how did this, did he know you already when you met him?
No. So Eli, I told him this the first time I met him, but he was in my spank bank for like 7 years.
Spank bank?
So yeah,
I was
with this guy for like a long time, like 4.5 years, and he was in a band, and we got engaged. It didn't work out, but it was, you know, I don't think that the end of any relationship is like a bad thing. It's just a, you know, it was a good experience and I have a lot of love for that person. But when he left that particular band, I would check in on them every now and then because they were in the algorithm, you know?
Sure.
And I saw that they got a new drummer and he was like kind of cute and a little weird looking. And he had all these tattoos and like crazy hair. And I was like, but you know, I was never single because I'm a serial monogamist.
Mm.
And I just would like check in on him every now and then, like look at his Facebook, look at his Instagram, and just do, 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 do. And he just looked so cool. Like there was just something about him. And fast forward to 11 years later, I'm finally single. And I just followed him on Instagram because I had been single for more than a week.
So help, Instagram, help.
I was like, I'm hard. And so I reached out to him. I didn't reach out to him. I just followed him. And then he was like, hey, how do you know me? And I was like, well, you know, you were in a band, blah, blah, blah. And then after some like awkward flirting, he was like, would you want to meet up for burnt water, like coffee? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. Cause you know, whatever. So we met at a cafe and we talked about the real important stuff. Like what's your credit score? And how much money do you make?
Get right to it.
For real. Because yeah. Like I said, when you hit 30, there's something about your give a damn that just goes out the window. Yeah. And I just didn't want to waste any time. He looked like a heroin addict. And he also looked like he could possibly be gay. Mm-hmm. He said hair flip all the time. Mm-hmm. He's very kind, very gentle, and very sweet. And when I just met him, I was like, those were my thoughts. I was like, gay heroin addict, let's mm-hmm. do this, mm-hmm. you know? And then he's
very warm. He's very warm right away. He brings in the warmth.
He just does. And, you know, the more we spoke, the more I was just fascinated with his existence. He's just such a cool human being. And he loves so purely. And I trust him. You know, there's something really cool about being with someone who you know is just your partner, and that he just loves me no matter what, no matter what. Like I can't do any wrong in his book. And yeah, we started dating pretty much right away and our journey began, and we got married within a year. I told him, do not ask me to marry you because it is a curse, because I was engaged 4.5 times before I met him.
4.5.
Yeah. One was I found out he was going to propose and I was like, you can make that a promise ring. You don't have a job. Yeah. I'm so nice. But, you know, he had this really great business and he had his own clothing company and he was a drummer and he was just like so cool, you know, like he just has like so many amazing stories and he treats everyone with love and kindness.
Yeah.
Like he's the most positive human being that I've ever met. It's gross. You know?
So my husband is too. It's so annoying.
It really can be annoying.
Like, can we please be a little bit cynical? I mean,
yeah.
Anything.
I'm like, I love if I'm like being a little petty and he goes there with me, I'm like,
yes.
Awesome.
Yes. I have one more question because I really want to get to it and then we can wrap up, but okay. I could really ask you a million things. How did you and your mom fare during this rehab time? Because I feel like it sounds like you were pretty close with her. Did she know about the addiction stuff when you were in high school?
I think my mom had an idea that something was wrong, but she couldn't put her finger quite on what it was. You know, in Kentucky, where I grew up, and in those times, like you just brush everything under the rug and you don't tell anybody about it. That's just kind of how I was raised. And I think that me going through that experience was my worst nightmare and it was her worst nightmare. And so I think that it grounded her a lot in her own. You know, like my mom is this amazing, sweet little church lady. And if you met her, she doesn't cut her hair. She wears long skirts. That's it. Doesn't show her shoulder. Like she is like in it. You know what I mean? And she is just a lover and all of those things. But, you know, she ended up with a daughter that, you know, can identify as bisexual, that has a full sleeve. My hair's pink at the moment. Like that, like was in pageants and did all this crazy stuff. And then my brother's pretty feisty too. Like he does not fit the mold of where we came from. Mm. But, you know, I think that in the beginning when I got sober, a lot of the anger that I felt and the blame game, I really wanted to blame my parents for everything. Cause I think that everyone does that first. Cause it's your fault. You know what I mean? But there came a time when I was really deep in my own recovery process. I want to say I was probably around like 13 years sober at the time. I gave my mom a proper amends. And basically, you know, I would always like shove my own trauma from Miss USA onto her. And she would still speak with that same grammar that I grew up with. And I would want to correct her. And I would want to because I felt like when she would say things, I would feel the slap on my hand. And so I put a lot of shit on her that it wasn't hers. It was mine, you know? So we were able to have that moment together where it was like, okay, we both went through a really hard time and we both have navigated this to the best of our ability. And we both reached that moment of mutual respect where I just want her to be happy. I want her to feel peace and I want her to feel love and I want her to have like pure joy, right? And I want to be of service to my mom. And she wants that for me as well. She loves my husband. She didn't want to like my husband because of the way he looks, because he also has 2 full sleeves of tattoos. And like sometimes his hair is pink. It's happened, you know, but then she loves my husband. She loves the home that we've created. Like she did a good job, you know, and now she's the best little Grammy in the world. Like I think with ZZ, she feels as though maybe she has a chance to do it over. And great. If my daughter gets the best version of you, bam, high five, mama. You're amazing.
And you know. And you turned out pretty good. So I hope she
listen.
Yeah.
Thanks. I'll tell her that you said that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Too. You have proof. Yeah. It'll be on this recording. Okay, the last thing I want to ask you, I feel like you've already said a couple of these along the way, but I like to ask everybody just to close with some piece of cliche advice, a saying that you think about all the time. And I feel like there's a million running around that head of yours.
Yeah, I think the thing that I always tell everyone, because I do a lot, I do group counseling. Like I am a substance use disorder, drug and alcohol counselor, whatever, life coach, whatever you need. So I usually tell my clients, like, follow the breadcrumbs. Every single experience that we have is divine. So I can literally see how I found my own husband through another failed relationship or closed chapter, you know, however you want to put it. I found the work that I do from the worst experience of my life. It's created this platform for me to help other people and to be of service and you know, live in my truth. And it's because I just said yes, you know, like I did the things that made me uncomfortable and I leaned into those things. So now when bad things happen, I don't say like, why me? I say like, thank you for giving me the opportunity to grow as a human. But it's really magical how when you truly look at every experience, it's happening exactly the way that it's supposed to, and it's bringing you to your next place. So I know that sometimes life can feel, not just for addicts or people with like substance use disorders, mental health issues, just the human condition is hard. It is not an easy world that we live in. But if we can just hold on in those moments of complete despair, there is another side to that, and it's not going to last forever. And just trust the process of life, because I really do believe the universe wants us to have the desires of our heart. I say that to my clients all the time. I'm like, look, if the desire of your heart is to get loaded, you're going to get loaded. Yeah. If the desire of your heart is to stay sober and have a happy life, you're going to stay sober and have a happy life. Because that's all you will work towards. Just do it. You know, I think there's a lot of things in there, but follow the breadcrumbs.
Follow the breadcrumbs is awesome. Tara, you're such a love. Thank you for being here. I can't wait for everyone to hear this.
So good to see you.
You too.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. You're the best.
You're the best. No, you are.
No, you. I think it's going to take me a little while to process everything I got from that episode. Tara is such a gloriously open book. I am so grateful she shared all of those nuggets. Oh my gosh. Woo. If you like this episode, and come on, I know you did, please share it. It really means the world to me. Share it, like it, review it, rate it, follow it, all of the things. And in the meantime, come find me over on Instagram at The Fertility Chick, at Abby Feeder, at InCircle Fertility. And I will see you next week.